Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm tired.
Oh.
I'm always tired, though.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to sound sympathetic, but... I mean, throw me something new every once in a while. Just say you're excited, you're happy, you're peppy.
I am all of those things. 100% believably all of those things.
I feel like there was some tone.
Is a room tone?
Yes, it definitely room tone. So
what's going on with you?
I'm fine. Came home to a police incident in Beverly Hills, so that was interesting. Not to sound glib about it, because a guy got tasered, but he seems to be fine, I hope. And that was in the alley behind my place. So great.
Mm-hmm. It's the less lethal method of dealing with situations.
Yes. So I'm hopeful that no one is seriously injured, including the drunk guy who is shouting profanity at the police.
It's not a good move to shout profanity at police officers. They don't like that.
No, not so much. But yeah, you know, it's all about awkward situations and things. So that's good. How are things in sunny Albuquerque?
Not bad, not bad. It's in the 80s today. It'll be 104 in 3 days.
Hmm.
So there's that. There's there's a couple of bunnies that live in the backyard. It's fun to watch them through the window rather than go outside because it's too hot.
Oh, so you're just eavesdropping on them?
Yeah, I stand there.
And you're a bunny voyeur.
I'm a bunny voyeur. I stand there and I watch them roll around in the dirt and eat the grass and then like hop and like jump at each other and then they take naps and stuff.
Oh.
It's quite adorable, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Do you watch any animals outside your place?
No. No. There aren't really... There's not a lot of native Beverly Hills flora and fauna.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Just succulents and drunk guys yelling at cops.
Yep. Well, there aren't really any succulents outside because people in Beverly Hills don't really respect water usage, so it's mostly just plants you'd find in the on the East Coast that require a lot of water.
That's right.
They planted those.
You guys got the that whole water thing with the droughts and the stuff.
Yeah, but it's better, I think.
Are all those rules still in effect, though? Like, you're not allowed to water your lawn and stuff?
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to water it anyways, because I live in an apartment. But, yeah, I mean, but that doesn't really... It's probably a good thing, because, you know, it's not exactly like it was a lush rainforest the rest of the time. So, hopefully this might change some usage patterns for people, but, yeah.
Well, it's important to obey the rules, because if you don't obey the rules... You just have chaos.
Yeah. And so basically the residents of Beverly Hills who don't obey the rules are Steve Rogers, and they water the lawns when they shouldn't because they know that in Siberia there's always going to be more ice for the things. So they got that going on or something.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this is spoilers for the new Captain America Avengers fight. People war profit universe spectacular franchise event. So that came out just a few days ago, and I saw it yesterday morning when the Incomparable was doing their live broadcast of their flash cast episode, which has since been released, and I was like, oh, we're definitely not talking about this. Because I'm just gonna go see it now, and I don't know when Dan will go see it, and you know, there's very little point to it because I'm sure everything will be covered. And then I saw it, and I was like, you know, you should probably talk about this. And then you saw it, and then I was like, do you want to talk about this? And you're like, I guess, but you don't seem that enthusiastic, and so you haven't really like framed what your verdict is. I'm gonna guess that you thought it was fine. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
So it was fine. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So. My experience was colored by a few things, though. I mostly went because I was looking out for that stupid thing that I made that's supposed to be running in front of the movie, which apparently is not running in front of the 9:30 p.m. on a Sunday showing of Captain America in my neck of the woods, but apparently it's running before Captain America for some people. But I wanted to see that, but it wasn't there. And then also, they redid our movie theater. It was under construction last time, but now there's a bar. The bar's name, by the way, is called MacGuffin's, which is nice.
That's really cute.
Yeah, it's cute. They have like Angry Orchard and like Sam Adams, and then like Bud Light.
Oh, all of the good craft beer.
yeah, and then you can get like one of three different colored margaritas, but you can take them all into the theaters, and they've got those like nice wide leather electronic reclining chairs, which are super comfy, and I really enjoyed lounging in that while watching the movie. But the audience was a little annoying; they were very loud.
Oh,
but the movie was fine.
Sorry.
It was all the great Marvel action figures punching each other.
Yeah, I mean, basically. And I went to it at the ArcLight since you didn't ask, and that was the Culver Cities one, which I've been to several times, and so it's not really that new or interesting.
Did it reinvigorate your desire to see things in a theatrical environment?
Not really. It was like $15 and. Woof. I went there at 9:30 in the morning on a Sunday, so it was mostly empty too. Somehow I managed to. There were probably seven people in the theater. Somehow I managed to have two people sitting right behind me, and right before the start of the movie, I was like, "Please don't talk, please don't talk, please don't talk, please don't talk." And there were two little kids, and I was like, "Please don't scream, please don't scream, please don't scream." And sure enough, everyone was quiet, and nothing bad happened, and I didn't have to be irate with anyone. So. Sunday at 9:30 might actually be pretty decent.
Because if they were to have been disturbing, you definitely would have stood up and said something to them, right?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I would have just sat quietly and been upset. It's the ArcLight, though, so the guy comes in and he introduces himself, and he says, please be quiet and let us know if there are any problems we can help you with. And then he, like, turns around and leaves. And so, I could have gone back out and talked to him had there been an issue and just relied on the forces of the elected officials of the theater there to come in and enforce action, but I didn't need that.
The fellow sitting next to me brought in a backpack full of tall boys of Bud Light.
Gross. I mean, I thought movie theaters were supposed to like check on that sort of thing. He carried it in. They just don't care.
Yeah, they also moved the box office where you buy tickets when they did the renovation, and now it's inside, but it's off to the side there. So like, I just since I don't want to talk to people, I just went straight to the kiosks, which are in a different place. But I bought my tickets, and then I walked over to the little ropes area, and there was just nobody there. Like maybe they haven't figured out how it's supposed to work now after the renovation. So like nobody tore our tickets at any point, so we could have just like walked in. and not bought tickets. But then there was also this large group of I guess it was four people on either side having this super passive aggressive argument about whether or not one person bumped somebody else's car in the parking lot. It was it was quite hilarious, and everyone in the place was staring at them sort of chuckling, and we just sort of wandered in and then sat at the bar, and I had a cider.
Oh
yeah,
I thought you were gonna have a Sam Adams.
Oh god, no.
Oh, and a bit Angry Orchard is fine?
I mean, it's better than Sam Adams. It's just sugar and apples and a little bit of alcohol.
I like the Angry Orchards, because I bought a variety pack one time. I like the ginger and the super dry, or whatever they call that one. But the other ones I find too sweet. Not as sweet as some of the other ciders you can buy, like what is it, Woodchuck or whatever.
I always forget. There's that other one. I think it starts with an M or something. But as far as cider goes, you can't go wrong with a Strongbow. It's pretty middle of the road. I'm a fan of Blackthorn. It's a little more dry, but anyway.
Dry like your wit.
No. Tis where I would say something clever if I had dry wit. But no.
No. There goes that compliment. Movie theater viewing experiences aside, I was delighted to sit there for a very brief period of time for the Rogue One trailer.
Yeah.
There seemed to be a very limited number of trailers in front of it because it was Arclight and I didn't have to deal with any crummy commercials from some upstart people. but by the way, sorry, I didn't see your thing.
I think you would have said something if you did.
So I saw the Rogue One trailer, and it looks better on the screen than it does on your iPhone. Surprise. So that was nice to be surrounded by that.
Mm-hmm.
I might go to a theater for that one.
You might go to a theater for that one?
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I thought it looked good. I mean, I thought it looked good when the trailer was out on the internet, too. But yeah, it's a good trailer to see in a theater. You know, the big the Death Star and the thing.
Yep.
Assembling the blaster doodad.
Yep.
Is there a technical term for the big denty area where the blast comes out of in the Death Star?
Oh, yeah, that's called the Emperor's Depression.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they name features like we name canyons and mountains after people.
Yeah. Like that's Vader's crack is the trench. Mm-hmm. The Emperor's Depression.
Fly right down Vader's crack and fire your torpedoes into the Emperor's Depression.
Yeah, I mean, well, you got to be careful because. You are not firing the torpedoes into the Emperor's Depression. That's the Emperor's hole, because the Emperor's Depression is the dish.
Well, it's a pretty small hole. Anyway, moving past that,
some people like that sort of thing. So the movie that we saw starts rather jarringly with 1991 in Futura.
There's a lot of Futura in this movie.
Yeah,
it's all Futura.
Well, I would say by area, there's a lot of Futura in the movie. Not like there's a lot of titles, but just the very large.
I mean, there's a fair amount of titles, too.
Mm-hmm. But we start off with 1991, and we get some Winter Soldier-y action, very similar to the Winter Soldier-y action we had previously. Not a tremendous surprise, since we're picking up basically where the second Captain America movie was, which we didn't talk about on this podcast, but I actually really like. It might be my favorite of the Marvel films. So glad we didn't talk about it. What?
More than this one?
Definitely more than this one.
What?
What? You like this more than Civil War? You liked Civil War more than you liked Winter Soldier?
I think I might.
Oh, really?
We might have to talk about Winter Soldier for you to convince me, because
okay.
I can't think of any particular reason why Winter Soldier would stick out.
I just thought it was a little tighter and had fewer things happening.
That's for sure, yeah.
That we're all... Because this movie has a lot more stuff, and many of the things that are in here might be all over the place if you haven't seen other movies leading up to this. So it benefits definitely from being an installment in that franchise, so they mm-hmm. can have character moments without having to explain everyone's origin story. They only have a couple origin stories they have to run through.
Yeah, there are a couple moments where they sort of rehash some stuff where it's like, oh, okay, that's there in case you missed another movie or something. But, I mean, on the whole, yeah, this movie does a ton of stuff.
Well, the hole is small.
Okay.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about this? I mean, I guess we'll save final judgments for preference till the end, but how do you feel about this movie on the whole in terms of how it sits in the cinematic universe? Ugh, I can't believe I called it that.
You're a part of the brand machine. Here we are regurgitating our thoughts and feelings in order to get people to further feed the machine. Feed Disney. So the only Marvel movie that I haven't seen is Ant-Man. I keep meaning to see it, but then I didn't. So
it's on HBO or something. Yeah. You can probably get it on your little app there.
Yeah. So I haven't seen it, but I didn't really feel like that was that big of a negative, although I can't judge it against the rest of the Marvel films. I just will say for sure that I like this a ton better than Age of Ultron. Even though this involves many of the same characters as Age of Ultron, since this is basically just an Avengers movie, minus Thor and Hulk, this is way better, worlds better than the second Avengers movie.
Yeah,
neither one of us enjoyed.
I continue to not enjoy because it's still on TV.
Well, then why do you watch it?
Because
I don't know why I ask.
This has similar themes in it to Ultron, in as much as it's still very preachy and dramatic and like, oh god, the consequences of what we've done and such, but it has I don't want to say lighter, but it takes itself slightly less seriously at points, which makes the movie more enjoyable. I think there's some drama to Ultron that makes it like, this is serious business, and you're like, oh, okay, whatever, serious business. And in Civil War, it feels like, you know, this is important for the characters there, but it's not like trying to make some large sweeping statement for a larger audience than the people in the movie, if that makes any sense.
Kind of. Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I don't really like this as much as Winter Soldier is because it doesn't really feel like we resolved the conflict.
That's what I was going to get into. So, this movie, while it does absolutely feel like it's a part of the canon of everything else that's come before it, this movie totally lives on its own in terms of like, it doesn't, like, it ends not having changed much from when it started. It's like it's a comic book run. Like, they started a thing and there were things happening, and at the end, some of those things turned into other things. But like, you know, this doesn't take us anywhere near like what's gonna happen with Thanos and where's this going and stuff. It's just like a bunch of stuff happens. It's very comic booky. There's a lot of action. If you think about it too long, none of it makes a lick of sense. And then at the end, you're just like, wow, we went through a lot, didn't we? And we're still here doing this stuff. So until next time, same bat channel.
Spider-Man will return.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed Spider-Man more than I thought I would.
Spider-Man apparently has been polarizing. If the online thought pieces I've seen making the rounds about Spider-Man have been any indication, some people are very in favor of it and think that he perfectly meshed well with everything inside the film, and other people are like, he really should not have been in this. There wasn't much of a reason. And I fall in the he really should not have been in this, there wasn't much of a reason camp. And it's not a lonely camp, but it's certainly not, it's not a, like a clearly defined thing where everyone's on one side or the other. It's almost like there's some sort of little Civil War bickering going on between the two. There might even be a 50-50 split on the thing. I have no idea. I haven't done a formal scientific survey on this, but
we should all go to the airport and fight about it.
Yes. And you run towards me, and I'll run towards you. Okay. And then make sure that you get a laser pointer or something and just draw a line. You might need to wave it back and forth a couple times to see if you can wear down the tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was so dumb.
This movie basically has three parts. The super interesting beginning. The what in the world is going on? Why are you fighting? Stupid middle part with the airport, and then the end of it, which is the resolution of going down to the bunker. So, I like the beginning, and I like many things about the end. Although I don't like that we don't actually resolve the film's conflict completely. I just the middle part where they're just like bashing each other is just so dumb. It drives me up a wall. One of the things I was really skeptical of when I saw the trailer initially was that it would just be action figures smashing into each other. And I've had the same skepticism about some other superhero properties where they just have them versus each other, and frequently happens in comic books. They usually fight each other over a misunderstanding. And you know what happened in this film? They fought each other over a misunderstanding. And I really like the fact that no one could just say, oh, hey, maybe we're making the situation worse than it should be. Mm-hmm. And no one could say, oh, hey, by the way, this is my theory. Can you back me up on this? And let's go at this together. Nope. Let's just not do any of that. Let's just fight each other.
Yeah. The way they got past that, there was a bit of dialogue that was just so poorly crowbarred in there to gloss over the whole, like, hey, can we sit down and be rational about this for a minute? Like, when, I'm totally jumping ahead, but like when Tony, you know, got the info
We're not going to go through this movie beat by beat, because it's 2.5 hours and I don't want to edit that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that either. When Tony got the info from Friday that what's his name was wearing a mask or whatever, and it wasn't actually Bucky that blew up the thing, and he forwarded it over to the guy who's in charge of whatever the hell it's called, not S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore, and then Tony lands and goes like, hey, you see the stuff? He's like, you think I'm going to believe you after what you just did? And it's like, well, yeah, if the information's accurate, you should listen to it, like, even if you don't like him, because it's how organizations and government should work.
Well, see, that's the weird thing about this movie. Both Steve and Tony are right in that Steve doubts that these institutions can be relied on to do the right thing in all cases, or to not interfere in cases where they shouldn't be interfering. But he's also wrong because he does a bunch of really dumb stuff in regards to Bucky that he wouldn't do in regards to anyone else. So he also proves Tony right that they can't just go running around doing whatever they want to, and also proving Secretary Ross right. I don't know if you recognize this, but Ross is, of course, the Ross from the Hulk. That was
No, from the Hulk. How?
Well, the Universal Hulk movie that they had with Norton.
Oh God, no! That was such a bad character. So poorly written and all of that. I was like, yeah, this guy looks familiar. But then I thought it was just one of those things where they've been like retconning the same guy, because they've had, like, you know, how many Howard Starks have they had? 2 or 3 now? And guys running stuff. Oh, that's right, because he was getting drunk at the end of the Hulk and Iron Man showed up and he's like, hey, how about a thing or whatever? And like, oh, that character they have done nothing useful with now. Anyway, I did want to give them a little bit of credit for at least making an attempt to, like, you know, you talk about action figures smashing into each other. There were, you know, at least at points they were trying to make an effort where it was like Bucky and Cap were trying to get from A to B, and the rest of the guys were basically trying to stop them from getting to that thing, and that's where the fighting stemmed from. Like, you know, the car chase / running through the thing, whatever. That was kind of like a we're trying to get somewhere thing. The airport less so, because they were like trying to get to the Quinjet, but it's like, hey guys, you're in the parking deck and the alarm goes off, so you know that they're coming for you. Maybe go somewhere else because you know they're coming. Like, just don't go for that plane. Go get another plane or something. Because you were trying to be super discreet with your little Volkswagen Bug and like your equipment from the back of a car with what's her name. But then you're like, nope, we know they're here, but we need that jet, so let's fight about it.
Well, there's a chance that if they leave the airport and evacuate along with everyone else, that they might be screened out with the rest of the evacuees at some checkpoint somewhere, because who knows what perimeter they formed around this or whatever. I mean, it also wouldn't be very good for them to try to go to another airport, because I'm sure those other ones would also be monitored. It just wouldn't necessarily have worked out for them to... It wasn't as simple as just dodging out of the way. So I can give them that, where they needed to go for this plane. I think the part where they are both being stubborn to the point where they're inflicting serious harm and damage to one another is the part where it's just like this was absurd. Like, you guys couldn't...
You're talking about at the end?
Or no,
the airport
about,
still?
I'm talking about the airport still. Like, they're seriously going at each other to the point where they're firing weapons and things that are not lethal, but are causing harm to them and to the airport. Like, how much money did they spend on that airport reconstruction project after this movie finished? Because they,
at least they
evacuated,
so they're not killing a bunch of innocent civilians, which is the thing that they've been preaching about this whole time.
Yeah, but they destroyed all their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it okay if you don't kill people, but you just destroy everything that they own? Like, is that where's the moral line for that?
I mean, the Avengers have a bunch of money, so they can just rebuild it. Like, remember in Ultron where he was going to go, like, smash that, like, half-built building with Hulk, and he goes to, like, Jarvis and goes, like, hey, how quick can we buy this building? Because I'm going to smash it. And then he smashes it, and he's like, ho-ho, give them the money, because caused a big problem.
Yeah, well, but, see, here's the thing. It's like, it's kind of messed up that they could just go around and destroy everything and spend money to fix it when it's not preventing crime or stopping a drug cartel guy or saving the world.
What is crime?
Yeah, but it's like dumb crime. Like, these people are idiots. Like, they just needed to talk to each other. The level of crime that this is at is not worthy of the level of destruction that has occurred on screen.
Yes, that is accurate. But yeah, then at the end there, when they're getting real into it, there are a great many things wrong with that final gigantic battle scene. And then they
mean where they tear the wing off the plane and destroy the plane and then crush.
Oh no,
Spider-Man
I meant like
way.
The end of the movie, but not,
oh,
yeah,
that.
Just,
oh.
But yeah, the. Yeah, the end of the airport scene. I thought it was amusing that Ant-Man did his gigantic thing. It kind of came out of nowhere. And
See, I found Ant-Man charming once they started the battle. Mm-hmm. I thought he was funny and quippy then. When he pulled out, when he got out of the van and was just for, you know, thanks for thanking of me and all that stuff, I was just like, this is a little rough, Paul. tighten that up a little bit.
He's better in his movie, but yeah, it is a lot of that double I got something I can do. I've done it before once in a lab and I passed out.
Yeah, well, I also like the part where he shrank inside Iron Man's suit and it was just like, oh yeah, you're gonna have to take this into the shop. And he's like, whose voice is that? Who's speaking? He's your conscience. And then he's, you know, just unplugging things. That was cute. So it's not like it's all horrible, but it's just fundamentally on a plot level where you have to apply logic to this. It's just it's not holding together for me. I don't buy the they had to do this. This was the only way.
No. I also liked when he was locked up and he was trying to throw jabs at Tony, and he said, "Never trust a star." He said, "Who are you? Oh, come on, man! Like I'm an Avenger too now. Please respect me." Anyway, but yeah. Yeah, so the problem with this, you know, it being sort of comic booky or TV showish, is, you know, if we're going to sort of sum up the reason that Cap is so resistant, is, you know, aside from many of the reasons around Bucky, it's that they want to be put under an oversight committee, but they also, through trying to figure out that Bucky didn't blow up this other thing, figure out that there is a bunch of other dormant Winter Soldiers that some guy is going to go wake up, and they got to go stop him immediately, or else these people will topple entire countries and governments overnight because they're so good at being awesome and stuff.
I really like that. It was just like, one of these guys can topple a country in a night. I was just like, how big is this country?
Well, they can get in and out and just wrestle everybody up and kill the right people and cause all kinds of chaos. So we got to go stop this guy right now.
Are we talking about Monaco? I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, this can't be that big. Like, it can't be that big of a country.
No, not
Luxembourg.
Really.
Like, how big of a country can they topple in one
but,
day?
Yeah, as soon as they figure out that there's
it's
a place
not China
with. I mean, I don't know. It's probably like one or two. You could kill a guy and frame another guy in China and cause some problems.
Okay.
I would think.
Because they're all caught up on the political inner workings of that nation. So they could do that in one night.
You say some random words in Russian to them, and then of course they're caught up on it. They can read real fast and then take in information. And then I think I'm thinking of Johnny Five, actually, instead of actual things. Anyway. So they go there to stop the guy from waking up the other Winter Soldiers. And then his plan all along was to show him a videotape and make them all mad at each other.
I like the plot twist because I didn't see it coming.
I was going to say, did you see that one coming? Because usually you're better at seeing these things coming than I am.
I did not. I've seen people online say that they caught these things super early and they figured it all out. I didn't.
Is this a comic book storyline, by the way? Something that has existed before?
I don't know any of these characters well enough to tell you any of that information, and I didn't bother looking any of it up because this is not really based so much on Civil War, the comic event that spanned several comic books for a long time, for like, I don't know, what, 6 months or whatever, 4 months, however long those things run. That was many years ago, and that's where the name of this is derived from. But it has absolutely nothing to do with what is occurring, because this is not about the same issues. It's just sort of tangentially related. And it's not really going to help us if we try to measure this against the comics, because they're so different at this point. They're only sort of like loosely related.
Yeah, and then, you know, they did the other thing in which this is similar to Ultron is... Iron Man's conscience getting the better of him and trying to come up with a solution for, you know, preventing the catastrophes that destroy everything, and, you know, the reason he invented Ultron and Vision in the first place. But, you know, the one lady gives him a photo of a dead kid, and then suddenly, like, he's broken entirely. And I you know, I give him props for, like, being empathetic or whatever and, like, letting this kind of sink in and realize, you know, the ramifications of what they're doing. But it's not like in the absence of that woman giving him the photo and telling him the story, like, all, you know, 170 countries around the world are telling us that, you know, we need to be put in check or whatever because we're breaking everything. But none of that hit home. It was just this one lady who showed me a photo, and then I finally understood. It's like, really? Is that what it took?
It's dumb, because this is also ridiculous, because they don't really address the moral issues surrounding the fact that Tony Stark made Ultron, which destroyed Sokovia and all that stuff. They basically don't bring up that at all. And he doesn't
my fault, but yeah.
Well, they're talking about the destruction of trying to save Sokovia, that they couldn't save them well enough. And then the argument is somehow that they shouldn't have bothered or something. It's very weird because they don't have guilt directly tied to Ultron, which you think they would, because this does have many elements from that in the film. There's, you know, of course, Vision and Scarlet Witch, like you said, but they don't really delve into any of the Ultron issues at all. And being like, in our attempt to fix this and make a perfect world, we really screwed it up. Steve Rogers doesn't even use that as a retort for why he shouldn't really be listening to Tony about this, because Tony has previously made an error. No one brings it up. It's really very peculiar. They talk about Sokovia a lot because... Yeah. Buildings crushed people and they died, and that Sokovia continues to have a huge impact on the world, considering it's not really a real country.
The interesting thing there is that they could have used the Ultron example as a reason that, like, you know, they screwed up and people died or whatever, but they decided to do that whole opening scene with weirdo dude from Winter Soldier who was fighting, and then that caused some inadvertent casualties, and they used that to show that, you know, even when they're trying to do nice things, there are casualties. And then, you know, this whole argument of, like, you think you're fighting for us, but you're just fighting for yourselves, and you're causing more damage than good. Just, you know, leave us be. Like, is the implication there, like, you know, the woman who lost her son, is the implication there, like, let us fight our own battles so you don't screw up and kill more people than the bad guys would have. It's like, really? What would you have done to fight Ultron in that instance? Or, like, what are you guys doing to fight all of these other guys who broke in to steal Anonymous biohazard weapon or whatever?
Yeah, well, the thing... Let's just go to the biohazard stuff at the beginning of the film, because that's a little less controversial than trying to address the Ultron, since they had something to do with making Ultron. With the biohazard guy, it's the former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent from the previous Captain America movie, who was a bad guy now, who I completely forgot about.
Well, it's because we all thought he died, because the building fell down.
I was just like, why is his face all messed? Oh, that.
He got hit with a helicarrier through the side of a building.
Yeah, it wasn't super clear, but I might have been mostly distracted by the shutter angle. But
what is the deal with the shutter angle? I know some of it was green screen stuff that just looked weird, but like that scene where Scarlet Witch is like wearing a hat and like pretending to be discreet drinking her coffee, it's like, why is this a 45 degree shutter for some reason?
I don't know. They did it for the whole opening of the film, and
for some of the fight stuff, like, that's fine. Like, you know, you've got that kinetic, you know, slamming people into cars and stuff, but they're sitting at a coffee shop drinking coffee. Is it like because you didn't feel like relighting your green screen set or something? What the hell?
Oh, I don't even think that was green screen. Like, I think that was just it was a coffee shop. But it's just I don't know if they thought it would just look better or something, but they miscalculated. Because that was really distracting, because it was all handheld camera, and so it just strobed. For listeners who are not familiar, since I'm on this digression now, shutter angle, there's like a little rotary thing that spins around, and even if you're using digital cameras, they approximate the same sorts of things. Dan can talk more about that with Bayer patterns and whatnot. But it basically controls how motion blurred something is, because it's changing how long the image is exposed for, how long the film is exposed for, or how long it's digitally the sensor is sensing. But the problem is that if you do it on those really short things and it doesn't get a lot of blur, then you only have 24 frames and there's not much connecting frame to frame, and so then things strobe because the arm is moving too fast across the screen, and it goes from 2 inches here to 5 inches there to 7 inches there without a blurry line connecting you through on that. And it looks very weird. You see it a lot in action things like Saving Private Ryan and etc. But just for a coffee shop with a handheld camera, that was not a good choice. And you just see things just shaking around and all jittery. Why? No reason.
Yeah, and I don't understand it. This fella, by the way, shot District 9, Elysium, Winter Soldier, Chappie, Civil War, and apparently he's also going to be the DP of Infinity War Part 1 and 2.
Well, something tells me that he gets along well with the Russos.
Yeah.
So look forward to more shutter angle issues.
I mean, I don't remember seeing any of that in Winter Soldier, but then again, I don't know that I saw I don't think I saw Winter Soldier in the theater. So maybe it was there and it's just less noticeable on the screen, or maybe there's just more action in Winter Soldier, so I didn't notice it because there were fewer quiet scenes, but good lord, that was annoying. Anyway, yeah.
Shutter crime aside. The thing with Lagos, the fight that's going on there and the guy with that is, you could argue that they made him by causing S.H.I.E.L.D. to fall or something, I guess. But still, in this situation, we have a guy with a biological agent who can cause an enormous amount of harm. So getting him is somewhat justified, and they didn't kill or harm anyone to get that vial, other than bad guys. And then when you get to the point where Steve is fighting the guy and he is going to blow himself up and take Steve with him, and Scarlet Witch has to contain him with her force field powers, that you have the moral quandary of, well, does that mean that you just blow up everyone who's on that block? Or does that mean you try to lift him up in the air and he explodes high up in the air and he hits some people in that building? So she potentially saved more people by not letting him explode on the ground. But it's very strange how they jump to them handling that situation wrong.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, the vague moral implication is that if they weren't there, the guy would have gassed some people, stolen a thing, and then left, and nobody would have been hurt at all. But yeah, who knows what he would have done with his biological
agent. Yeah, with the biological agent. Yeah, so it's definitely very safe to argue that they saved tons more lives than the 11 that died in the building.
But the thing is, there was nobody above them to be able to make that decision as to whether or not the cost was worth the carnage or whatever. So
yeah, as long as you have a bureaucracy you can blame for it, then you can kill as many people as you want to. Look at the United States.
You gotta distribute that blame amongst the large committee of many countries.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like both Tony and Steve are right, because Steve is obviously right that the bureaucratic oversight that would come about from the people involved in this movie, like from Ross and from Martin Freeman's character, would not be ideal, and is in the film not ideal either, because Ross basically is just like, yeah, I'm just going to do whatever I want to. I've got people in my special prison called the Raft, and I feel super great about that because I'm a nice guy. And I'll just
yeah, they did a great job of sort of like uber vilifying like the government. People like, oh no, it's not going to be so bad. Cut to like prison coming out of the middle of a stormy ocean. It's like, really? You kind of went straw man, like mad scientist, evil bad guy with your government guys. Like, we've got to Guantanamo under the ocean where we're just going to put these guys forever because we're evil.
Yeah. It was a little extreme. But then you can't be like, oh, Steve was right, because Steve does a bunch of boneheaded stuff in this film.
Hashtag Steve was right.
No, Steve was not right. So they're both kind of right and wrong. It's just like, in the world that is depicted here and with this scenario that they're in, Steve is wrong to do the stuff that he does to save Bucky in such an extreme way that it causes tons of damage and harm, and Tony is wrong in the way that he puts all of his faith and trust in this institution because he doesn't want to bear the burden of this responsibility anymore, and without recognizing that this institution is just not up to snuff for handling the moral and ethical issues that in the way that he would like them to be. So
they lack communication. So even if you're going to put who's it, Ross, in charge of stuff, and you know, let him sort of be the conduit from the oversight committee to the Avengers, like the information that the Avengers acquire needs to be sort of debriefed and given to the people making the decisions. And there's no indication that anyone was even planning to do that sort of thing. It was just like, well, now I'm the one guy making the decisions, even though I'm not the guy out in the field punching stuff. So that's causing problems.
Yeah, and no one mentioned the fact that they were basically setting up what was S.H.I.E.L.D. with Sam Jackson as Nick Fury, only you're replacing Nick Fury with Ross. And it's just like, well, that's less good. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but when we put all of our faith in S.H.I.E.L.D., they made three carriers that were going to wipe out people with special remote control weapons that were powered by super secret software that needed to be overridden with chips that you could rearrange. So it's just like, I don't know if anyone really remembers the events of some of the previous films quite as well as maybe people in the audience do, because it's a lot to ask to put your faith in these boneheads. The other thing with Nick Fury is I can understand not seeing him, but it's weird to not mention him when you're talking about this kind of government oversight. And Ross, when he's going through the list of places that they've destroyed, brings up DC and shows, you know, his recap footage of the helicarriers crashing into the water.
By the way, yeah. I loved that where he's like, here's some clips from all of the horrible things gone wrong. And they show every single clip. And then Tony's like, all right, that's enough. It's like, no, you just showed all of them. What do you mean that's enough? You watched all of them.
Well, curiously, they left out Johannesburg when the Hulk and Tony smashed that up because Scarlet Witch had caused some mental instability within him with her powers that she doesn't use in this film. Which is also weird to me too, that she can kind of make people see things, and feel things and be afraid of things, and doesn't use it. Just the picking up stuff and the force field things.
Well, she changes the color of Vision's stone for a minute before she squishes him through the floor.
I thought that was like she was putting like a little mini force field around it or something.
Yeah, I mean, something like that. I don't know. I thought she was going to be like, oh, I'm getting into your head through the gem. But no, it was just like, I'm going to make you do the limbo and then shove you through the floor.
It was very weird, too, because it was like, this is a lot of damage. I hope he's okay.
And Vision... We should get back to some plot things at some point, but like, but what they did with Vision in this was weird. Like, you know, there's a whole bit where he got distracted and he ended up hurting Rhodey instead. But like, he should be able to handle all of this on his own very quickly and very easily. But he's basically treated like a big dumb kid with a nuke on his shoulder or something.
Yeah, it's very strange how they treated him in this film, because he's supposed to be really powerful, and we see that power in many spots in this film where he can pass through solid matter and use that to his advantage in a fight, which he does do in here. But it's just like, but then when it comes to the airport battle, he's just like, I'm gonna float over here, guys. You guys do your thing. And then I'll blow up a control tower, and I'll draw a line in the dirt.
He is dumber than Jarvis, which doesn't make any sense, because that's where half of his personality comes from. But yeah, when he did the laser thing, Amanda looked over at me and made a face and just said, they literally drew a line in the ground.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really dumb. It's really not super bright. I mean, I liked his sweaters. Everybody likes the sweater.
It's a good look. It's the... It's the San Francisco nice office uniform. Everyone dresses like that up there.
And it's cute that they establish that there's some affection between Wanda and Vision.
And that he doesn't know how to taste food.
Well, I mean, they don't really make this super clear. He says he's never eaten before. But I don't know if that means he can't eat or he doesn't know if he starts now, if it will be of any use to him in his recipe that he is making for the paprikash or whatever it's called. But
I don't think he has like an esophagus and like lungs and stuff. He's probably just got like a little speaker at the back of his mouth, because he's like kind of part robot thing.
Yeah.
So he would probably just like put food in his mouth and chew on it and then have to spit it out or something. So
that would be awkward at a dinner. And if you ever had dinner with somebody who wasn't eating at the same time, and so you're at a restaurant.
So bad.
It's the worst. And then you just start like being really nervous if you're eating too fast, or if you're eating if you're not talking enough, that they're having to carry the conversation. Then you're like, but I have to eat this, otherwise I can't finish it, and then just talk to them like normal person the rest of the time. It's so awkward. That must be terrible for him. Poor Vision.
The equally awkward one is when you're having dinner with somebody and you're having a conversation, but it's a very one-sided conversation for a long period of time where they're obviously talking so they can't eat. And then like you're trying to eat at a reasonable pace, but no matter what you do, you're going to be done like 10 minutes before they are, because they're just talking.
Yeah, and then they come by and they take your plate, and then
you're just sitting there with like maybe a leftover spoon that you didn't use, and the other person has like their full meal.
Yeah. Anyway, awkward dinners aside,
awkward.
The only parts of Vision that I like in the film are the scenes that he has with Wanda at the Avengers compound. Those are cute little scenes, and he cares for her, and there appears to be a romantic level of affection. I don't think that Wanda is currently reciprocating that, mm-hmm. but she seems to at least like him.
But she's not allowed to go outside because she's too unwieldy, and she might end up hurting somebody with her powers when she goes to the grocery store, apparently. So Tony made sure that Vision wouldn't let her leave, which makes no sense because, I mean, if you're at a battle, that's one thing. But does he anticipate that she's going to, like, trip and sneeze and, like, blast a hole in the side of a building just going to buy, like, basil at the grocery store?
No, but supposedly the thing is that it's only until they get the Sokovia Accords ironed out, and then everything will be fine and then go back to normal.
Right, because the public is freaking out because they blame her specifically for blowing up the side of that building.
Yeah, they didn't really drive it home as an ongoing concern people were having. There's that news report that she watches on the TV, and Steve walks up to the remote control place right in front of him where he would walk in through the door, yeah. And turns it off. But
it's very much Wag the Dog. Of course it's true. I just watched it on TV.
Yeah, it's not really driven home as like something people are like experiencing an ongoing concern over. Like no one seems super scared of Wanda, other than that one news report that's like, oh, they have power that's unchecked, and it's like, yeah, well, what else is new? The other thing about her that's weird is that they've all forgiven her and worked closely with her, even though she was not a good person before. And she wasn't brainwashed she was brainwashed in the, I was raised with this belief that I will get vengeance for Tony Stark killing my family or whatever. But she's moved past that. And so she betrayed Ultron and helped them out, and then they're all on the same side, and then she lives with them, and they all hang out together, and they talk to each other on a first-name basis, and they're all buddies. But for some reason, people have a really hard time with the concept that Bucky might also receive some kind of benefit of the doubt, or be saved, or not be entirely responsible for the actions that he has committed. Even though he was in a very similar situation where he has commands that can be spoken that flip a switch that make him do exactly whatever it is that they command him to do. So
it's innocent, yeah. People don't run, and he ran away, so he must not be innocent. But then the other one later is, gigantic spoiler, I don't care, he killed my mom.
Yes.
Like, all logic goes out the window, and he goes, you know what? Don't care. I'm just going to kill this dude because I want to kill him because I miss my mom.
Yeah. And this is that end part with that logic there is weird because you can see that Tony might be swept up in the emotion of finding that out, that he's standing there with the killer who committed this crime in this moment here. But the weird thing is it goes on for a really long time afterwards where they are beating the crap out of each other. It's not a quick little fight. And it's not something where you wouldn't have the time to stop and think about what you're doing. So it's not entirely unbelievable that he could still be driven by that adrenaline of finding that out and his rage and fury over it. But at the same time, it does make you question a lot of things about Tony if he's got all this power, but this can mess him up so badly and cause him to go off the rocker enough where he would just like cold-blooded murder somebody.
Well, there's that retcon scene earlier when he's at MIT presenting his holographic therapy device where he said, I wish I would have said I love you to my parents before they drove off and died that time, but I didn't get a chance to because I was a punk little kid. So clearly he's still got some developmental issues there. But yeah, I mean, there's so many things wrong with that end scene there, not least of which is Tony's motivation. But then there's like, you know, he's getting beat up and he's like, hey, Friday, analyze his fighting skills so then we can beat him. It's like, wait, what?
Why wasn't he doing that before?
Yeah, seriously. And then like, is Friday controlling the suit now? And then you're winning, but then you lose again. And then you turn into just like a petulant child and you demand that he give you back his dad's shield or whatever. But there's, I guess, okay, so on top of everything we've talked about Now, let's go back and talk about whatcha who's a dude, Zemo guy, I think that's who he is, and yeah. his whole plan. So, he was from Sokovia. His family died. They thought they were far enough outside the city so they could watch Captain America and Iron Man being heroes and stuff and blah, blah, blah. But he was a soldier or whatever. And when the thing came down, it killed everybody. And he wants to get his revenge. But you think he's going to get his revenge by going and getting the other Winter Soldiers. But what he's actually going to do is he somehow learned about the fact that Bucky killed Iron Man's parents. And he wants to reveal that to them so they tear themselves apart from the inside. Because that's the only real way to hurt the Avengers is to have them tear themselves apart. Because stronger men than him have tried to tear them apart from the outside and it doesn't work. So that's what happens in this movie.
Well, I don't actually have a problem with his plan. I have a problem that he believed that every part of that would work flawlessly.
But well, it didn't work flawlessly. He had to drown that guy in the sink, and the guy in the sink could have just told him about... He knew the date, and he just wanted to know... Like, he kept interrogating people, like, give me the mission log or whatever, like, tell me what happened. Like, you already know what happens, apparently, because you're trying to get these people to say it. Like, and then, you know, he says, I gotta go do this the hard way, and it's gonna be bloodier or whatever, which is, assumedly, that's the whole bombing the UN thing, and, flushing out Bucky, so... Bucky gets caught, and then he can pretend to be the therapist guy. But, like, all of that was just to find out where the spot in the mountain was where all the other guys were hidden. And also, apparently, the videotape was hidden. But it seems like he knew that this was the thing from the very beginning. Like, was that written in the little Red Star book or whatever? Like,
no. He knew that former general guy that he found in Cleveland. From when he had been stationed working for Hydra under that guy. And when, so he knew about Bucky and he knew about the program.
When was he working for Hydra, though?
Well, he was also working for Hydra in Sokovia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he worked for that guy. And he talks to the general. He's like, oh, you're looking as good as you used to or whatever, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, right,
and,
right, there was that.
Yeah, it's at the beginning of the film, so I can understand if by the end it's not immensely relevant that he knew this guy, but that is how he came to his connections through the organization and through knowing him and working for Hydra. It's how he knew about where this stuff came from. I don't know necessarily about how he knew about the soldiers and this mission, etc., but didn't know where the base was. Or maybe he knew where all that was, but he didn't know that the tape was also there or something. It's sort of strange, but he supposedly gets that location from Bucky once he flips the mental switch on him.
Can I ask a super, like, poop on everyone's parade the day after, like, bad movie critic question?
Sure, I love those. Go ahead, poop. Poop through your little hole.
So, the way Bucky killed Iron Man's parents there was he snuck up on them on his motorcycle and used his big, strong metal arm to basically push their car into a tree, and then... Nope. No?
He shot them.
He shot them?
There was that little shot thing, but I thought it was like a taser or something. I have no idea. It was like that loud bang.
I thought he just like hit the car with his fist or something.
Oh.
Anyway, the car crashed, and then he punched Howard Stark in the face and then choked the mom. But my main question is, you know, that whole thing took place in the road and swerved off and hit a tree. Why exactly was there a camera next to that tree?
Maybe he put the camera there because they wanted evidence that he had carried out the mission.
Well, but then at the end of the video, he shoots the camera.
Yeah, I don't know.
That part doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So, I mean...
Maybe it was just the fast way to get the camera down from the tree. I don't know.
I'm just going to shoot it. I mean, not that it had to make... And basically what? Howard Stark had a trunk full of Captain America juice that he was taking somewhere? Is basically what the implication was there? That's the juice that made the super soldiers?
Yes. Supposedly that is the super soldier serum. Or at least samples of it. I don't know why he had it in his car like that.
In 1991?
You think that would be, like, more closely guarded than just giving it to Howard Stark in an unlocked case to put in his trunk. But, I don't know. Howard Stark didn't play by the rules. he's got the Super Soldier Serum, which is, I'm guessing, leftover stuff from the experiment that they have not been able to successfully reproduce, that produced Captain America with the other guy in the first movie. Because all of this other stuff with trying to make other soldiers hasn't gone amazingly well for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the weird thing is that they had that, he takes it back, they make these other soldiers, and no one in Hydra used them. Supposedly that one general didn't think they could be relied on, but he could still control them or something. There was like a line in there that's why they're not really used, but they can be controlled enough or something.
Yeah, to cause havoc, but not necessarily do anything specific.
Yeah, so I guess it's sort of believable that nobody used them, but, you know, Hydra was in a rough spot, so maybe they would have sprung them, but they didn't. I guess maybe
the rest of Hydra knew that they had died in their sleep in their little chambers or whatever. Oh, or no, they were alive, but he shot them.
Yes, they were alive in cryosleep, and so the whole audience, except for the people who had realized whatever this master plan was, thought that he would thaw out these other soldiers and get them to fight the Avengers. And so, you know, you're thinking, oh no, there's going to be four super soldiers that are going to fight Bucky and Cap and Iron Man, and how's that going to go? Well, we don't have to find out, because they walk into that room and they've all been shot through the head. And it's interesting, because that wasn't exactly what you thought would happen.
Mm-mm. It's a little weird, but then I guess if this guy is just like at the end of his rope and just trying to burn everything down, I guess you get it, because, you know, he just keeps listening to his little voicemail from his dead wife and kid, and then he eventually deletes it because he's going to shoot himself. But Wachahuza stops him and says, like, we ain't done with you yet. We're going to put you in a glass box in the thing.
No, he says something like, you can't escape into death. Because there's a rather poetic comment that he makes about death after his father dies.
I think he said, like, the living aren't done with you yet or something.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I liked T'Challa and the Black Panther stuff. I thought that was all good. I did not object to him the same way that I objected to Spider-Man. I was like, why is this person in this film? With Black Panther, I was like, totally needed to be in here. Totally works. Explains a lot of stuff when you get to the end of the film, and you have your credit scene with the bad perspective on that building pan thing with the cards.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that he's in this doing his thing. He goes from diplomacy to I'm just going to blindly murder people pretty quickly.
But it was his dad. Again, it's the you know, dead parental figures, you upset people.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. And I look forward to more of a backstory or explanation in his standalone film, hopefully. But it's just like, we go from never having met this guy to I've got a bulletproof suit with retractable claws pretty quickly. And he was great. I enjoyed him in this movie in all instances, but his character just kind of comes out of nowhere. And then I really, really hate that shot they do where he's in the foreground, where he tracked them to the super soldier sleepy room, and Captain America's like, why did you kill all the people at the UN? And they cut to him in the foreground turning his head slowly, realizing in the rack focus where he goes, oh, it wasn't Bucky, it was him. It's like, come on, do we have to do that shot?
I like that shot.
No.
It was short. It was really short, and it just let you know that he overheard the conversation.
And yeah, I know, it's the most stereotypical way to do that, though.
What would you have preferred for him hearing the conversation?
Turn my head away and focus my eyes and think and go, oh, I was wrong the whole time.
They didn't do that. You were exaggerating.
He turned his head away and kind of squinted his eyes, and he was thinking, it's like, in case the audience wasn't paying close enough attention, I get it now. It wasn't Bucky. It's like, he's there. He's in earshot. We get it. He should be able to hear this now.
That was your...
It bothered me. It was lazy.
So anyway, the moving past your horribleness, the shot was fine.
It was them.
Fine. But of all the shots in this film that I could object to, that was not one of them. I think they did a good job servicing that character. We got the father. We got the relationship that they had. We got some of the sort of mysticism about him. We got that he has cool toys and gadgets, and it's from this reclusive nation that has a lot of power and science and things. And
yeah,
that,
he's like the Wakandan Iron Man, basically, or Tony Stark, in as much as he's rich and does whatever he feels like.
Yeah, well, and he also has a responsibility to his people, whereas Tony does not have that. So in many ways, he has... some characteristics that he shares with other different Avengers than Tony. One of the things I also like is that it's not the same white guy saving the world thing. So I'm happy that they mixed it up.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me a lot happier. And we also have Falcon, who does a good job. Mackie delivers a very nice performance. He's got some humor, not a lot, but a little bit. And you know, we have a ScarJo again. She's rational and calm, and handles things very, very deftly. She doesn't really 100% believe in Tony, but thinks that maybe his is the best way, even though she was just in a film where they fought the government. So. It's interesting. There's more to what's happening here than just Tony and Steve hitting each other.
Yeah, in spite of the fact that they literally draw a line and choose sides at the airport, there seems to be a little bit more than a black and white, which side are you on, portion of the story, where people are kind of bouncing back and forth. And there's the part where Captain America almost gives in and signs on the thing, and then we'll figure it out after that just so we can make a step in the right direction. But then he feels like he's being played because Scarlet Witch is being held captive, and he's like, I'm not holding her captive. It's just for, you know, her own good. And he's like, not her own good. Blah, blah. Stand on principle. Here's your pen back. I'm going to go punch stuff.
Mm. And I'm going to be perfectly honest. I thought Sharon Carter... Peggy's niece.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually kind of creepy that they kissed.
I had that sentiment echoed to me as well.
Does Amanda agree with me?
She did, because, well, she misremembered and she thought he was married to Peggy.
Oh,
but
no.
I mean, technically, yeah. They never even really like had a date. So I mean, sure. I mean, how many years after does it take for that sort of thing? But
yeah, but still a little strange. Guy from the 1940s who was frozen and used to have a romantic fling with your aunt, the kissing there, it's just a little strange. But it's not so, at least they didn't dwell on that, but it was just
that was slightly less weird than I managed to sneak all of these things out of the evidence room in the back of my car.
That was not believable, but
no.
I
feel like people might have noticed that.
Yeah, but maybe that's how they were. It would have been fine, I guess, if that was part of their plan for tracking them. If Tony Stark's like, "Yes, I put a tracker on them and let her get away with the things," mwahaha. But Tony doesn't do that,
right? Because he's got to go appeal to Falcon.
Yeah, it's very weird. But they I mean, there's that cute little moment where Falcon and Bucky are in the little VW bug, and you know. Bucky's like, can you move the seat up? And he says no, and then mm-hmm. Bucky kind of slides over to the side. It's nice. It's not so terrible.
And then later when they get knocked out when they're fighting Spider-Man, or just couldn't do that earlier. I hate you.
Yeah, that was
no.
Nice.
I'm Captain America's best friend. No, I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of funny.
It was funny. It was I enjoyed that. I would pay good money for a Bucky and Falcon buddy cop movie.
Yeah, they're not best friends, and they're gonna solve the biggest crime if they don't kill each other first. It's one of those.
Yeah. No, but I just got drawn back mentally right now again once more to Spider-Man, which I didn't think worked very well, especially not his introduction, where Tony goes from their little makeshift UN headquarters in Vienna over to Queens
in large Futura text.
Yes, in large Futura text over some apartment condo building things. And we have this kid who goes into the apartment, and there's Tony Stark, and there's Marissa Tomei. So this is our first introduction to Peter Parker and the new Aunt May, since the last two were discontinued. And it's weird to have them thrown in this way, because we don't get a sense of these characters. They're not played the same as the characters we've seen before, so it's not actors taking over a role, but it is actors picking up sort of a mythological role. Mm-hmm. It's not identical to what the comic books are, though, so it's also not exactly the same. You don't have the same level of context. So when it's just like, oh, your Aunt May, she's so young and attractive, and it's just like, ugh, creepy. And, you know, she's wowed by Tony Stark coming in, and she's so excited by it, and he's so nervous, and he's all just nervous and overacting just a smidge. But he's a child actor, so you got to forgive him to a degree. They go into the bedroom, and then they have their conversation, and it's like, oh, I knew it was you all along, because I've somehow been tracking people in sweatshirts saving people in Queens, because that was a big thing on my to-do list as Tony Stark.
That doesn't make any sense, other than maybe he's like, oh, I've got a computer algorithm searching the web 24/7 for people who have powers, because we got to be on top of all that stuff. But
he doesn't say that.
No, it doesn't make any sense how he knew anything about Spider-Man. I thought it was kind of amusing and cute with the befuddledness of the suddenly Tony Stark is in your living room or whatever. And
yeah,
you applied for my grant and like, you know, your webbing is really strong and awesome and stuff, and you need to come help us. Like he was super crowbarred into the movie. I thought the kid, what's his name, whatever his name is.
Is it Tom Holland?
Yeah, it sounds right.
Tim Holland, Jim Holland, John Holland. I don't know. It's a Holland.
I thought he was amusing. He wasn't sort of the sad mopey Spider-Man. He wasn't super smart alecky Spider-Man. He was just kind of, I'm a kid and I can do some stuff. And it's
he was too golly gee shucks for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got these powers, and it's just, if you don't use them, that's just a shame, man. But he was, you know, they gave him some funny bits, you know, it was a little dumb, but they gave him some funny lines with the, you know, you've got a metal arm. And remember that really old movie Empire Strikes Back?
I kind of rolled my eyes when he did that. I know a lot of people like it, but it didn't feel like he was being sarcastic. It felt like he was just saying it. If he had been like laying it on thick with some sarcasm instead, then that would have been a little funnier. But I do like the retort of you know, how old is this kid? And it's like, I don't know. I didn't carbon date him. But it does raise a lot of questions about why you would get such a young kid to come with you to Germany to put on a suit that you made in a couple hours, that he's going to jump around and fight all of these potentially lethal people. Because even if Cap and Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch and all of them, even Ant-Man, or even if they're all not going to actually harm Spider-Man, even if they're all going to pull their punches, you don't really have the same guarantee of Bucky, who he assumes is a murderer. So I don't know why you would really just be like, yes, kid, you come with me now, and I'm going to make you this special suit, and then I'm going to put you on this battlefield with all of these people who will kind of play fight you, but not really. And then Steve Rogers will drop the jetway on you. Just try not to get actually harmed by Bucky Barnes, and you'll be okay. Now, there's
they need their help, so it can be 6-on-6, and he told them just stay away and throw webs at people, and it'll help us out. Because he felt outgunned or something, but yeah, that's, I mean, there's no reason, because they have Vision, and theoretically Vision should be able to do all this stuff too.
Yeah, and if it was about the webs, if that's the reason why he wanted to have him, like, oh, here's this perfect, non-violent way of slowing everyone down, why not just get the webbing and just take it and have it and use it yourself?
Build another autonomous Iron Man suit that shoots webs and have it fly around and shoot webs at people.
Well, or just put the webbing wristlet things on everybody else on your side and have them all web people, but none of them are equipped with it. It's just the Spider-Man guy. Well, he's just some kid that you found in Queens and brought over here and put in a little fancy suit that you just made, and then you make him your little soldier.
It was also his tryout to be an Avenger, sort of.
It's very shoehorned in for franchise reasons, and I mm-hmm. don't care for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
shoehorned in. Yeah, but he amused me.
And there's the whole thing with the fighting where Steve drops that, like, jetway mobile truck thingy onto him. And it's like, you're potentially crushing a teenager. You don't necessarily know what he's fully capable of. So, sure, he might be superpowered enough to hold this thing above his head. And maybe he can do it for a couple minutes. Maybe he can do it for a couple seconds. Who knows?
He didn't know he was a kid.
Yeah, well, it was pretty obvious from all of the talking that he was a kid, because he had the little squeaky voice.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, and it also bothered me with the, when he's fighting all these people, he would just be like, oh, golly gee, I'm so glad that I'm getting to fight you. Oh, you're so great. I like you so much. Don't take this the wrong way. And it was just, infuriating. Anyway, I just wish they had not put him in here, because I think that it didn't help. Also, I didn't like the I'm gonna say something controversial, because apparently I'm the only person who has noticed this, and maybe it's just my mental image of how the scenes unfolded or something, and maybe when I get the Blu-ray it'll be different, but I'm not getting the Blu-ray because I don't own a Blu-ray player, and I have no interest in buying this movie. You're owning it. But the when they have the fight, he's CG the entire time up until that point where his mask gets knocked askew by Steve Rogers dropping the jetway on him or whatever. It's very weird how that happened. But regardless, he's got the practical suit on for that, and it is totally different looking than the CG suit he had on. It's not all shiny and Fresnel blue around the edges from all of the HDRI Skydome open air stuff that they have going on in the airport. So his suit's very different when it's the practical one. And one of the things that I think actually is quite nice about the older Spider-Man films is that he mostly looks like they did a decent job of matching to the practical suit, so that you didn't always go, oh, look, it's CG Spider-Man every 5 seconds. Now, some of those things don't hold up necessarily over time, but back then it didn't really stick out. But no one's complained about this, so it might just be me overanalyzing something, and I might be misremembering it, but it bothered me at the time.
Yeah, I tried to look out for that, and I couldn't really see much of a difference in that scene where it was askew. It looked to me like when he was on the ground, they did a CG replacement of the suit as well, and they just kept the portion of his exposed face as real. But maybe you were seeing something that I wasn't seeing. But I mean, you know, in general, he looked pretty CG most of the time. So
yeah, well, I mean, it's as when I complained about this to Jason Snell, he said, because I was trying to find out if anyone else also objected. It seems a lot of people feel like the animation of him is very weird, and I will agree on that, but it was mostly the material quality that I was objecting to. But nobody seems to have an issue with that. But a lot of people are kind of hung up on the animation, but the way Jason Snell said it is, like, you know, it's going to look weird no matter what, because nobody is going to do any of those things. And, you know, there's a point there.
Hmm. Yeah.
I guess. We'll just have to see when the new Spider-Man movie comes out how that shakes out. And we have... we have that little scene at the end with the Spider-Man will return, and we have
I was going to ask you, what the hell was that?
That was setting up the franchise building opportunity. Nobody else will return, just Spider-Man.
No, not the text, the whole Spider-Man will return, but what was his glowy wrist thing?
Oh, apparently it looked like some sort of special spider interface computer thing.
Yeah, was it like a bat signal for Spider-Man, or like his Avenger like amulet or whatever to let him be part of the crew now?
I don't know. It seemed to have like a dial around the edge, so it almost looked like a sort of interface where he could turn it to select things. Although I don't really know why you'd want that to have be like a hologram that everyone would look at. It seems a little obvious for many situations, but whatever, they designed it.
Also, I couldn't tell, like, it looked like he didn't realize what he was wearing. He's like, whoa, this thing has a hologram, but like, it's on your wrist. Where did that come from? Nobody like snuck in and put that on you while you were sleeping. Like, what's going on here?
I don't know. He had to itch from the new web slinger things or something on his palm, and then he accidentally triggered it, I guess, is how they tried to make it look. But I don't know. I mean, it didn't come with an instruction manual, but I'm surprised that Tony had the time to make that.
It was just his parting gift, and it was actually a thing instead of just like some jewelry or whatever.
You have a secret hologram computer that can come up at a moment's notice that I never told you about and could surprise you in a battle potentially. I don't know.
Speaking of other end things that were completely sort of stupid and unjustified, I did not like the end of the actual movie, like the letter to Tony from Cap, where he's like, I'm sorry, I knew your parents were murdered or whatever, but I hope you know that even though we're not BFFs, that I'll always be there for you because I'm Captain America and I want to do what's right, and here's a phone in case you need to call me. And Tony's like, oh, that scamp, Captain America, he's a good dude, even though I was super mad earlier. Like, I guess he had time to settle down from his I don't care, he killed my mom, I just want to murder him thing. But he went from, like, blind hatred to, oh, that Cap, he meant well all along, way too fast for my taste, especially considering that, like, he's there with Rhodey going through, like, his physical therapy where he can't walk and he's paralyzed. And even though Rhodey's, like, you know, he gave his whole speech about, I'm a soldier and I flew all these missions and this is what I signed up for and I wouldn't trade it for anything, even though this kind of sucks. I don't buy that Tony went from like guilt-ridden, psychopathic, angry guy who wanted to murder Bucky to I'm fine now and we're just going to start to rebuild.
It smoothed out a little too quickly. I don't think that it was deftly handled because, like you said, we do go from the previous scene where we have that slow camera move out on Tony's blurry edges. So blurry those edges. Light I don't know wrap. Who did that fight, but those edges were blurry. Maybe the green screen was bad, but ugh. So they go to the physical, you know, therapy, and he's helping out Rhodey, and he falls over, and they have their little conversation. It's a nice Rhodey moment, although it doesn't make much sense, because it's like, yes, I would do it all over again. It's like, I would change a couple things, because I think this is all pretty dumb. And they have Stanley make his cameo with the Tony Stank, which is nice. I'm going to call him Tony Stank. I'm going to use that now. Table mm-hmm. for one, Tony Stank. So he opens that letter and we get the voiceover and it's just so sanctimonious. There's not really like a, this is not a whole lot of apologizing in that letter for things. And there's not really like a whole lot of I'm taking responsibility for stuff in that. It's mostly like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I did the right thing, and I will fight with you in the future so that we can be together and be buddies. Here's a burnaphone. Love you. Peace. Mm-hmm. Bye.
It's mostly like they watch the end of Shawshank Redemption and are like, we should do something like that with some nice mellow voiceover. But it's, I mean, to actually justify it, they would need like another 5 or 10 minute long scene of Tony going on just like a drunken bender in his Iron Man suit without the helmet, like smashing stuff in Vegas and like gambling and just being a huge depressed degenerate for a little while, and then eventually getting smacked out of it and sobering up to help, you know, Rhodey get out of his funk, and, you know, same thing with him. But like, yeah, it just went way too quickly. And, you know, at the end of the movie, Captain America has learned nothing, because he's exactly the same character he was at the beginning of the movie. He's principled and people were hurt and stuff, but like, you know, the safest hands are always our own, and I've proven that through this whole thing, even though I beat up my best friends and stuff.
Yeah, he has faith in people, and that makes everything okay. I mean,
yeah, I was really just, I didn't want to tell you, but it was really for me. It wasn't for you. It's like, come on, man. Really? You're 100 years old and you're still like struggling with your own personal maturity. Come on.
No, well, he didn't want to tell Tony because he didn't want Tony to hurt Bucky, because Bucky's his friend. That's why he didn't tell Tony.
He said, I didn't know it was him, but I knew that your parents were killed by an assassin or something.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure what that was in reference to be perfectly honest with you, until I listened to the Incomparable episode on it, and there was the conjecture that it was supposedly in the scenes with Zola in the bunker, and they're showing them, you know, all the unfortunate ends that the people met with, that you know, Howard Stark had died in a car accident. But they don't say all the stuff about what had happened or whatever. It's just implied that they all got bumped off by Hydra, except for Peggy. But I guess that's because she didn't carry a super serum in her trunk of her car. But
pro tip for not getting assassinated.
Yeah, it's really very strange that we don't have a scene where Tony talks to someone else on the team who might be doubting Tony's approach, because he talks to Rhodey, who believes in Tony's approach. And since the movie doesn't resolve who is actually correct in this, or who we should really be rooting for, because either you're like Team Tony, Tony's right, only the government can do this right, or you're like Steve, only Steve, you know, people can only do what's right, governments can't be trusted. But there's the movie, like I said, either one of those cases can be argued, because the other side is kind of not really operating completely great. And so it would be nice if at the end of the film, rather than just having a scene with Rhodey where it's like, yes, we did the right thing, we will do the right thing, and then having a speech from Captain America, if there had been a scene where Tony talks to somebody who doesn't necessarily fully believe in what they're doing anymore, doesn't fully believe in what they set out to do, that where they've accomplished what they did, and confronts Tony about his behavior, and then he has to rationalize to that person what he did. Perhaps that is something that will be included in a future Marvel movie, but it's not here, so it's a little strange, because it would have been nice, you know, maybe Black Widow is like, you know, because she has that one scene with him earlier where she's like, I had to help him because, you know, you're wrong about this stuff, because you're obviously not behaving correctly and you're doing all this other stuff before he goes off to the raft to see Ross. But she should have also been there at the end where it's like, yeah, so you happy you did all this stupid crap, you jerk? But she's not there to say that. There's no scene of him reconciling with Wanda for locking her up twice in the course of the film. There's no confrontation of the opposite side of what he did. There's just Rhodey saying, yeah, we did the right thing, yay.
I mean, at a very minimum, they could have brought back that thing that they were kind of sort of using as a device throughout the movie, and had him go talk to Pepper for once, because she's not around, because they're taking a break.
I don't think they could afford to have him talk to Pepper, but the kind of money this movie makes, yes, they can afford to have him talk to Pepper. But that would have been nice too, like you're saying. Like she shows up and she's like, you know, I was keeping my distance and I was going to wait till everything's settled down and that you were being a good person, but you're a real jerk. I was just going to keep my distance. Once you think about what you did. I don't know if that necessarily would have been super satisfying, since she wouldn't have necessarily been in the whole film. Her absence is just in the film. Maybe perhaps something related to her absence would have tied up nicely at the end. And for such a big scene with Alfred Woodard at the beginning, it doesn't go anywhere or mean anything other than that one little speech he has at the beginning. So that doesn't tie into anything else. Which is part of the reason why that feels so superfluous, I feel like. That maybe if at the end, you know, Alfred Woodard is like, you know, you think you did right, but you're never going to be able to fix this stuff, and even joining up with the government now isn't going to fix stuff, and, you know, you've just royally screwed up everything, even some more, and I'm never going to forgive you, no matter what. Ha 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 ha. But that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that would have been a great ending of the movie.
Yeah. That was her plan all along. No, but I like Alfred Woodard. She was in Star Trek First Contact.
Who is that again?
That was that lady who shouted at him at the elevator.
Oh, right. Gotcha. Because
she knew exactly where he was going to go after his speech to the elevator, where she didn't push the button.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had a really good plan for that.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird.
I did like the young Tony Stark CG. I thought that was some of the better de-aging stuff I've seen, except for the part like right at the end where he walks really close to the camera.
They should have kept him further away. It's uncanny Bally territory, mostly because you know that it isn't real.
Well, I mean, in the beginning there, yeah, it looked pretty good, especially if you've seen him in some of those older movies where he looks just like that. It was pretty well done.
Yeah, it really is the part where he comes up really close to camera and just stops. Where
the eyes.
Shouldn't have done that.
It's all in the eyes.
Yeah, but you know, there's a lot of work for Lola there, that because they also do Vision's face, because he's not really like flesh and makeup. If you look around, like the eyelids and mouth and stuff, that's all little tracked pieces of things glued onto his face.
His textures. Got robot parts for eyes.
Yeah, there's that. That talk in Age of Ultron about how they do all that work, and they do it at like a 3.5K, I believe, is what the Lola guy had said. So I assume it's probably the same stuff they're doing for this.
Probably, because this was shot on Alexa with codecs as well. So I assume that this is Arri Roll.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we could actually look at IMDb if we could.
I don't care.
Yep.
Yep. So they did the stuff and the things. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of vendors who worked on this. Like, tons. Tons of vendors. You got your ILMs. You got your, was it Twixter or something? Or
There were like 20 different visual effects facilities on this.
So many. Tons of people. Digital Domain. At least they didn't do something that stuck out as much as when they split up the Ultron shots between ILM and Digital Domain, because those looked really different. And the Iron Man flight suits also looked really different. I felt like this was a little more cohesive. There were some not so great green screens in here, which I assume were from some of the lower tier vendors, less expensive vendors. But
which green screens? I'm not sure I remember them.
When they're in that final bunker battle, I basically didn't like any of them.
Oh yeah, the light coming through the louvers or whatever that thing was. It was just mega light wrapped and weird. And I guess some of the
it destroyed all the edge detail. It looked super cut out and strange.
Well, the super tight shutter thing with Scarlet Witch, when they did that like rack shot to ScarJo in the background there, her key was not as sharp as the foreground one, or it was too sharp, I should say. But apparently, this was partially shot on Alexa 65, Alexa XT. And Epic Dragon, so 3.5K, 6.5K, and probably 5K from the I guess 6K for the Red Dragon stuff too, but all the DI was at 4K, so look at that.
Hooray.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of format mixing.
Well, and all the VFX shots, I'm pretty sure were not all 4K, but I'd have to have an insider speak on that, or I'm sure there'll probably be an interview at some point that'll be on FX Guide or something.
Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, some of those sharpness issues that I might have been having there with the coffee shop, that might have just been some of the Red Dragon stuff that does not look super filmic that I have a personal problem with.
Yeah, I don't think that any of that was green screen.
Hmm.
I think that was photographic.
I think there were a couple shots that were green screen.
I don't think in the coffee part it was. I think in the other parts after that, yes, but not that one. But we'll have to agree to disagree because we'll never know the secret.
There won't be a zillion behind the scenes things in the near term.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move along to final verdicts and stuff.
This was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I saw it.
Better than Ultron.
Better than Ultron, yes.
But you still prefer Winter Soldier.
Yes, only because I feel like it told a story that had a resolution to it, and I don't feel like this movie had a resolution to it.
It's,
so I feel
it,
like that's a point against the movie.
It adds a lot of things to the canon of the cinematic universe, but it's more or less all-encompassed start to finish. What happens in this movie happens, and then you end with the same basic structure as when you began. The team is kind of sort of broken apart, not super well working together. I mean, I guess they're a little further apart at the end of this movie than the beginning, but they're not like a super cohesive team at the beginning of the movie. And then, they have some interpersonal conflicts. Bucky has one arm and he goes back into cryo sleep because he can't control himself if somebody were to shout a bunch of random Russian words at him.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. Just because he can't walk around and get himself in trouble.
But I mean, he's in the middle of the forest. Like, why does he have to go into cryo sleep right now?
I don't know. It's fine. And then we don't have to worry about paying him for the next film or something. I have no idea.
He should get Tony or somebody who's smart with technology to invent him some earplugs that filter out specific words.
Well, I think he burned that bridge with Tony.
Mm-hmm. Well, he just needs some noise-canceling headphones or something, some noise-canceling earbuds that only cancel out specific Russian words.
Okay.
I feel like that's a thing that could exist in this world.
It is totally a thing that could exist in this world, because they can have anything they want in this world. They can freeze people. So, yeah, it's interesting. I do like that they have this new sort of base of operations in Wakanda now, because they're all just going to hang out there in this fictional African nation and be protected from Tony, and that through T'Challa's actions, he has the guilt and remorse to make things right and set this up for them so they have somewhere to go. They're not just all like on the lam like Bruce Banner, because that would be boring. But I don't know where they're going to go necessarily from here. I don't even know what the next movie is other than Spider-Man. I don't know when Infinity War, the first one, actually comes out. And can you imagine how long that's going to be? This is 2.5 hours, and Winter Soldier's 2.5 hours, and Infinity War is already in two parts, so I'm imagining that's going to be 2.5 hours each, easy. So then you got, what, 5 hours of Infinity War that'll be coming over the course of a couple of years? It's all being shot at the same time, and
You got Black Panther standalone movie in there somewhere, too. Isn't
well,
there
that's, another that got Thor pushed back. Movie? They got pushed back because the director left the project over disagreements on creative stuff.
Oh.
So it's going to be 2018, I think, now. And the Captain Marvel movie, I think, is also pushed back to 2018. And the... I think the Guardians one might be the next one after Spider-Man, but I'm not sure. Remember
right.
Guardians?
Yeah, that's on TV a lot still.
I'm gonna get you a remote, or I'm going to call Cox Cable on your behalf and
DirecTV.
Call DirecTV on your behalf and just say, "Hi, I'm Dan Sturm, and I want to cancel my cable because I don't like it and it's too expensive."
Is that what I sound like?
Exactly. Totally. So I'll do one of those two things, and then that'll save you from watching Age of Ultron and Guardians of the Galaxy, which you don't even like.
Okay, great.
Over and over again.
Appreciate the assistance there.
I don't know what it is. It's just like you walk into a room and it's just like, oh, this movie I hate is on. I'm just going to sit here.
I mean, it's better than nothing. I wouldn't say I hate the movies. They're just...
You said you hated it. I have audio of you saying you hated it.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes. And Ultron.
Yeah, I mean, Ultron's dumb. Ultron's dumb. Guardians of the Galaxy is just not good.
Okay. Yeah, well... We'll see how it all pans out. Maybe we can regroup for that Spider-Man adventure. Or maybe I'll insist that we're not going to do it right up until the day after I see it. we can do it.
I did watch the Fantastic Four movie, though, by the way.
Oh, how was that? I still have not really wanted to go see that.
It is on HBO, so you should watch it on your app if you got the thing. It's not good.
Oh, that's really such a surprise.
I don't know if what... Did we ever get any resolution about whether or not what Trank said is true about, like, them redoing the ending without him? Because the ending is just kind of non-existent and just kind of like, you go, what? And then it's over, and then you're like, why? What was that?
I don't know. Trank has retracted what he said. Or something. It was very weird how it all transpired.
I don't remember if he shot a different ending or if he wrote an ending and they just made him shoot this or whatever it is, but you can tell the writing in this movie is just so bad. There's just like, they're going to do what now? And that has what to do with what?
The rumor is that things were not going well. They didn't like it. So they monkeyed with everything that's at the last portion of this film in editorial monkeyed with. But then they also did reshoots and there was a wig involved. And so anything you see with the wig is from the reshoots. Cause I think
who was wearing a wig?
Whoever it is it Kate Mara or?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She, I think had a different haircut or something. So she had to have a wig on to match her thing. That she had for the other thing, because they had stopped filming this, so she had gone on to do her other stuff. Supposedly Matthew Vaughn was involved in the reshoots, but he can't have shot it without Trank, because I think that's against DGA stuff. Like, 100% sure that's against DGA stuff or something with credits. I have no idea what's happening. But that is supposedly the rumor. And Trank has said that he wasn't involved in what they did with the end of it, but then sort of recanted that and said he wasn't happy with how things came out or something, but not that he wasn't involved. It's very weird. And the producers have said that, of course, he was involved because they deeply respect him and they're all friends. Very weird and not believable at all. So I'm inclined to believe that they didn't like the movie and didn't like working with him and didn't think he would fix it and involved Matthew Vaughn in trying to fix it because he had worked on the X-Men First Class stuff with them. And so that is my mental model of what has occurred. I don't have any true source for what happened with it, but I'm not going to go see the movie because it's not been well reviewed.
Well, it's free.
That's not a reason to see something.
Sure it is. So you understand what it is. And there's, you know, we like movies and stuff.
Emphasis on like. But yeah, so I think that really wraps it up there. We liked this movie enough. I didn't feel it was perfect. And I didn't feel like it was the highlight of the MCU. But I'm happy to see the story progress, I suppose, in terms of the overall moving of the chess pieces of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Relatively speaking, nothing happened in the film. So
yeah, I was going to say, maybe we'll see in retrospect what this movie did for the MCU, but it feels like it didn't do anything.
It feels like they set up events for Infinity War and for Spider-Man. So it feels like they did a lot of
this whole movie existed just to like reveal or introduce Spider-Man and Black Panther.
Well, I think they wanted to have the disagreement with Tony and Steve and to put them at odds, because that'll give you dramatic tension when they need to come back together again.
Well, they already didn't like each other.
Well, they already had dramatic tension from Age of Ultron, when Tony's like, I'm going to make a synthetic human that's programmed to be perfect, and he'll carry out justice for me. And then Steve's like, no, you're not going to do that. It's really dumb. I'm going to kill this thing. And then Thor, zap it with your lightning thing. And then, oh, crap, it made it come alive. So that had already happened. Mm-hmm. But everybody just kind of forgot about that. And they were all hunky-dory. So
Marvel.
Yeah. And I'm sure once the events of Infinity War get rolling and they all come back together to work to stop Thanos as a giant mega franchise team, because it'll also have everyone in the MCU in those two movies. So Guardians of the Galaxy, everyone in the Spider-Man stuff, everyone in Black Panther stuff, everyone in the Avengers, everyone in Iron Man, everyone in Thor, everyone will be in it.
I hope they bring Deadpool.
No, they can't.
They can't? I thought he was on the right side of the line.
No, Dan, he is a mutant. He is Fox.
Bummer.
Yeah.
I would have enjoyed some Deadpool in this.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
It's amusing.
Oh, because you've never mentioned it before, so I was surprised.
I thought I mentioned. Well, you know, get on your Letterboxd app or whatever.
Oh,
it's childish. It's exactly what you think it would be. It's amusing.
Okay, ringing endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good talk.
Mm-hmm.
Feel like we really accomplished some things. I'll write you a letter about my thoughts and opinions and include a burner phone.
Make it a flip phone too, just to be extra insulting, because Tony Stark, big fan of technology, here's a flip phone.
Yeah, I kind of like that touch of the burner phone being a flip phone. You know, you can't accidentally push the buttons. You can't butt dial anybody.
Should have been a Zach Morris phone. Because Captain America's old.
Or one of those bulky satellite phones with the battery pack.
Like a briefcase.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess Wakanda has a cell provider that will interface with that for that burner phone.
Sure, yeah. In most of the other countries in the world, aside from the United States, you can buy world phones pretty easily.
I don't understand necessarily how Tony would not be able to track where Captain America is and therefore where Bucky would be if he was still angry.
It's a good faith phone. It's all patched up now. There's no reason for him to track.
Yeah, let bygones be shipped bygones.
Right. And because, the general guy called him, he put him on hold like he said he was going to do, so he's clearly not working with the general, so who is he going to spill the beans to about where Cap is?
Yeah, but he can't not work with the general now because he signed the thing.
Right, but he doesn't have to tell the general where Cap is. He can continue to be sassy towards authority.
Yeah, and he doesn't have to help everybody who they broke out of the raft, so they can be on the lam now too. Yay!
Mm-hmm.
But then he has like almost nobody really saving the world at this point. So for him and Rhodey, who's not feeling so well, and the Vision, who's kind of probably going to be bummed that he doesn't have Wanda around anymore, and ScarJo, who may or may not be in trouble for betraying them, it's a little unclear. So I don't know if he's necessarily fully staffed.
He'll build some more robots.
I think that didn't go well. But since everybody forgot what happened in the last movie, maybe they'll make it again. This time it'll be different.
Civil War.
War. Heroes on both sides. Sorry.
Wait, what is that from?
Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, God. Opening crawl. That's right.
Just ending on a high note.
At least it wasn't that. Woof.